you know, the values at home and others is like what type of environment and support are people getting. I think we're going to have to be more attuned to that. Of are people grounded in their own self-worth and the way that they see themselves and the community around them? And
hi, and welcome to the Leadership Now series with Nick Vujicic and Christine Grimm, Aria Consulting, 23 years of executive coaching, and I'm humbled that she is my coach. I could not lead without the sound coaching from Christine, and I'm so glad, Chris, that we get to coach everyone watching. Tell us what we're going to be experiencing here on this series.
Yeah, we're going to coach you around leadership, around real challenges, how to navigate the challenges that you have right now, and how to feel good about it.
I'm so excited, Chris. You're going to be sharing with us also your pool of CEOs that can bring in and chime in some principles from their experience as well. Thank you for joining us here on the Leadership Now series. Here's today's episode.
Jeremy, you know, as a president and founder of a 501c3 and as an executive, we have to go through these trainings online for HR, right? And man, it was like, I have to do 2 hours of watching videos and answering multiple choice questions about how the 1,000 different ways we could be sued, and someone not feeling like they're being heard, or when a complaint's done, sexual harassment, this, that. How do you guys see corporate America with the sensitivity? I mean, and it's hypersensitive in California more than many other states in the country. And it's like, it was almost as if, man, if I actually watched this before starting a nonprofit in California, I don't know if I would have wanted to start something in California, because there are just so many things that have been defined to make sure, which is a good thing, to protect everyone. How do you make your team feel protected in such an uncertain way to make people feel like they are being heard if they have something to say, while we're doing social distancing with super sensitive topics, with other people's perception of values and how they're reacting to the news or reacting to you reacting or not reacting? I mean, we just had an interesting discussion. I've got 12 million social media fans, and we had an internal confidential, you know, discussion, like, are we reacting to this or are we not reacting to it? If we're reacting to it, how do we react to it? And it's like, well, people are going to judge you if you react, and people are going to judge you if you don't react. And then it's got damned if you did, damned if you don't. But how do you in corporate leadership, you know, do this and keep everyone as a team grounded through so much uncertainty without you faking it, that you know what's going on? And you in a way saying, hey, okay, these are the ground rules, right, Chris? You taught me and my team, these are the ground rules. Make sure you honor the ground rules. I love that. What are the ground rules, guys, for this play? This is huge. And Chris, Jeremy, I know you know what the ground rules are. You know, I think it's important that people who don't know what ground rules are, I mean, I didn't know what ground rules were until Christine Graham and said, hey, let's talk about ground rules. What rules? And it just changed our trajectory, changed our team dynamic. How does someone implement ground rules in these times practically, with social distancing, with the uncertain times, with also understanding people's different perspective on hypersensitive issues that affects everyone?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot there, and I'll definitely say personally, I don't have all the answers to that. And I think as part of leadership, I mean, leadership is definitely a journey, and we're learning and building new muscles all the time. And I think that's part of the importance of coaching and the importance of mentoring and leaders too, is that to recognize that, wow, there's a lot that you just said there, a lot of super important things. And none of us, I don't care, born with some innate ability to just be able to go out and address all of those effectively.
Right.
We're learning that through experience. We're learning it through coaching. We're learning it through mentoring. And we're learning it through, like Chris was saying, an observation, whether that's us as young children or our children, or just as we're observing and admiring or not admiring the actions of leaders around us. But what I, you know, what some of the ground rules, another like to me, like perhaps related to that is our principles, is the principles and values that we've talked about. And in the workplace, I think like you were talking about some of the legal and risk management things that have come up. We've got to understand that those are necessary because of some of the bad things that have happened, but we can't rely on them. Those are necessary, but not sufficient. So how are we still as a team talking about and exposing what our shared principles, what our shared values are, the way that we're going to work together, regardless of, and in addition to some of the corporate requirements and legal requirements that we all have, so that we develop a sense of trust. And I know there's a lot baked into that word, because again, I've learned a lot from Chris, you know, what's baked into trust, but, you know, trust and respect and those things. And then I think what, you know, none of us have probably done enough of that in our organizations, because we've had the benefit of coaching other things. I'm sure we've all done some of it, but now we find ourselves in these trying times and being removed where, you know, we as humans, you know, much have been written in our own experiences. Like it's really hard for us to take some of the emotional cues and being as empathetic and sensitive to the situation remotely like this versus what we can in a real environment. But if we at least stick to, recognize, talk about, stick to some of those basic principles and values that we've hopefully established as a team, and then probably talk about what else do we have to emphasize now, or are there things we need to add? And that's what, you know, and some of Chris's work with, not only me, but my teams, because I brought her in many cases just to help the broader team as well as me as a leader, establish ground rules, whether it's ground rules or principles or other ways. Essentially, what is the way that we are going to engage together? What's acceptable? What's not acceptable? What's the expectations? Mm-hmm. And part of that practice that you've had with Chris and my teams have had with Chris is just being explicit about that. That is something that is intentional, should be discussed. Don't assume that we all have the same beliefs, the same values, the same way we want to be communicated with, and we need other people around us to help remind us of that too, because even though I've been through and I've invested tons of time and money in efforts like this, it's still a journey. I'm still learning, mm-hmm. and I need to be reminded on a constant basis some of these things, particularly in today's environment and the challenges we're all facing.
Yeah, you know, that was great. And I would just add one, maybe two things to it. You know, first of all, I think that along with our original thoughts about being in pause a little bit more, slowing down as much as you can, pausing, and you did it immediately when Nick kind of passed the ball to you, Jeremy, which is kind of first admitting that you don't know everything. And I think that that would go a long way right now. And I'm finding even in the last few days, that's part of the conversation I'm having with a lot of people, which is, you know, please slow down, listen more than you talk, be willing to admit you don't know. And also something that's super hard for most of us, I think it's time for us to admit that we may have been thinking and doing things that with maybe unintentionally were hurting other people. And for some people, that's a really tough pill to swallow, but I think that it's the only way for us to set new ground rules, right? So to your point, ground rules, that's an agreement between people of how we're going to behave together so that it feels appropriate and safe to people. And I know some people are like, oh, that's so touchy-feely. And frankly, no, it's just practical if you actually want to get things done with other humans. You know, we have to have an agreement, and that agreement, you know, people actually have to agree, like this feels okay to me. And when people feel like it's safe, right, I'm going to be respected, I'm going to go into the situation, and now I have people who are willing to try something new. They're going to potentially allow me to show up in a different way, and I'm going to do that. You know, I don't know another way to do this. You know, so I think about everything that we're saying, and to anybody out there, leaders who are, you know, really listening to what we're saying, to what you said, Nick, and what you just said, Jeremy, the only way to have new ground rules is to stop first and listen, not go into action and build a list of ground rules. You know, that's not the way. Stop, pause, listen to your people. And be willing, instead of defensively, to hear that something that you, if you have a business that's been running for generations, you might need to face that for generations, you and your business and the people in your business, you know, you might be practicing something that doesn't work anymore.
I think just to reinforce that, because I'm sure I've had lots of conversations with colleagues in our places, it just doesn't come natural. It doesn't come natural to me. You know, in that action oriented, always moving forward, never enough time to do anything, that pause can seem so inefficient and so unnecessary. And I'm not the guy who likes the groundbreakers, and I'm not the guy who likes the touchy feely. I appreciate them sometimes, but I'm not. But you know, what we're talking about is different than that. What we're talking about is that, and this is where I've learned the effectiveness of it. So now I can appreciate it more. It still doesn't come natural, but I appreciate it, which is taking that pause, being intentional about asking those that we're interacting with, whether it's home and community or definitely at work, just to set those ground rules, set those expectations, the way we're going to work. How are we going to come together? How are we going to communicate? And I've seen, like I said, I've become a believer in that. It's not come natural, but I've become a believer because I've seen the positive outcomes of the way it is that we more effectively move up that ladder of a high performing team and start to be more productive. And then that's where my efficiency and action bias starts coming. It's like, wow, this is really working well now because we are being action oriented now. And we've got there more quickly than if we wouldn't have had this pause and this explicit conversation about values and principles and ways of work.
It's awesome, guys. We covered a lot of ground. There is one other thing we do want to talk about before I say what it is. So I just want to recap for everyone listening. We've talked about the ground messaging as leaders, what we tell ourselves, what we think about ourselves, maybe what we should reassess about what we think about ourselves, our value that helps us to stay in the objective thinking mode, that in the times of chaotic or fear-driven emotional actions or whirlwinds around us, that when that riptide comes in and pulls you out, that you come back to where you know you need to be as a person, where you might reevaluate some things and where some things now have challenged those values or confidence that you put into some aspects that are no longer there. To understand who you are as a person, as a leader, first and foremost, as you as an individual citizen of society, number one. Number two, your family. Number three, your coworkers and the corporate environment here with so much uncertainty. And then trying to make sure, just like Jeremy said, that you're still bringing people with you and in that leading, not putting that unnecessary pressure on yourself to think that you need to know everything before you say anything, or that you even pretend that you know what the ground rules are going to be with this new planet that we're on. Really, really enriching time, guys, together. And I love how, Christine, like you, I was just thinking, you know, this week, I said, what a privilege it is to be in your position where, you know, we're one person. Jeremy has his influence in his sphere of influence. Mm-hmm. I have my sphere of influence online, but you, as a coach of executives that have employees in the tens of thousands, you know, we're talking tens of thousands of families where you're actually getting into the mind and heart of these leaders that really make a positive domino effect and say, hey, whoa, time out. And you say things that executives like, I hate you for it, right? I love you, but I hate you. I've said that to you. I was like, I love it when you said that, but I hate it when you told me the truth. And it's like, but it takes sometimes somebody that can tell you the truth. And it's not that we're just surrounded by ourselves with yes people, but it's the fact that, Christine, you've had the 23 years of coaching experience where you've been able to ground leaders in wisdom, in truth, in self-reflection, and not telling them just to shut up, stop, just wait, time out, right? And really do this. And that's why it's important. Jeremy, you said it, to surround ourselves as leaders, mm-hmm. to make sure that we are true and making sure that we don't limit our potential, that just because you get what you think you need or want, it doesn't mean actually that you're more fulfilled. And that you can go to sleep better at night, and that we're just waiting for things to change before we could feel something. It's not about that. It's the here and now to discover as leaders what we would never have discovered. I'm gonna be transparent here for a second as we talk about resilience, this last thing. I made an intentional decision this morning, Chris and Jeremy, that in the next 7 days, I'm writing a letter to myself. It's been a while since I've even thought about writing a letter to myself. And we've always said, hey, if you could write a letter to yourself when you were 8 years old, 15 years old, what would you say? That's easy. That's easy. But if you could see my life as a Rubik's Cube, in the last 8 years, I got married, bought my first home, had 4 children, did a reorg, massive reorg for the nonprofit that Chris, you helped us and go from 2015 to 2020. Amazing revolution. Now in 2020, my for-profit is like, okay, everything's on pause. No speaking, no motivational circuits. I'll do webinars. And now we're moving state. And now I need to find new caregivers. And now we need, I'm on a new landscape of operations of the things that are continuing to exist and those things that are not existing anymore for now. It's like I almost, and I'm going to, Chris, I'm going to be doing these Zoom calls from our temporary home in Texas in my master bedroom closet. We're going to do soundproof. We're going to put lighting. It's like, it ain't going to look like this, but it's like, wow, it's almost like I need to, a part of me, people have been asking me the last couple of weeks when they do the webinar with me or for their corporate in the last couple of weeks, how do you continue to be resilient? And I felt like one of the keys to this for leaders is to ground yourself to everything we've talked about, but also long-term goals, to know that this ain't it. Yes. And to remind yourself of some long-term goals that maybe have paused years ago, or you felt were impossible, or I don't have time for that now, or the rhythm of what we were in, the treadmill that we were in, although it worked up until a certain time, maybe it doesn't work anymore. For me, Jeremy and Chris, and everyone watching, I'm so glad it feels like I get a second chance. I look at my oldest child. Forgive me if I've said this already on another episode. I don't think I have. But I look at my oldest child, Kiyoshi. He's 7. I didn't miss his childhood. I live in an era where we can do stuff like this on technology, still be true to my value, my purpose that's grounded in my faith as a Christian, to know that I can still plant seeds of love and faith and motivate and encourage without having to go on 2,500 airplanes and actually pick up the baton intentionally and be the best father that I can be the best husband that I can be. And if that means I need to eat into my own savings for the next 12 to 18 months to just wait and sit as a Tasmanian devil to just, that's been brought up so many times here on this one. It's super hard. And it's almost like I need to, because half of me does want to sit. And the other half's like, yucky, icky, what's going on?
Right.
My gosh, what is happening to me? I feel even a little depressed. Some mornings I wake up, I'm not motivated. It's like, what is going on? Writing a letter to myself is something I'm going to do for me. And I feel like that's going to be something. And I don't know if that's going to be inspiring someone else to write a letter to their team, you know, reminiscing, hey, you know, our company 10 years ago, we went through this. I remember when we went through that. No one knows this story, but let me share this with you. And people appreciate you at least communicating to them. It's like, yeah, as a leadership, even though we don't know what we don't know now, back then we also didn't know what we did, what we now know too. Right. And bringing in that grounding sense and being transparent to the team on that level is what I'm trying to do as well. As well as for me and my own family, being okay to pause. It's almost like for the half of me that's not okay to pause, it's almost like to nail that in. For me, it might take a Nick Vujicic in 2020 to write a letter to Nick Vujicic in 2020. How do you guys see resilience for you guys? Like, how do you, what do you tell yourself or think about or pause? What goes through your mind for your now resiliency in 2020?
When I think about resilience overall, one of what you were mentioning about the letter, I mean, that's part of what we were talking about really through that show, is that taking that pause and being intentional. And there's definitely, you know, I've seen it. I have a liberal arts undergrad. And so we had to write papers even in math class. And I know that by taking the time to actually write out full sentences and complete paragraphs, particularly in today's world, that that's powerful. It makes us think, it makes us reflect. And then also when we're able to communicate that to our teams, it's powerful. I actually just did not a letter to myself, but in our consulting business, we've come so far so fast in the last few years. It's been very exciting. But we've also, we've moved along our brand aspiration. We've gotten much closer to the hill, but we hadn't taken the time to really write out where we are now and where we're going. And so, we're too busy with client work. We didn't, quote, have time to do that, right? And so I spent a little bit of time with some others and, early one morning, wrote this all out. And now it's gone to the team. And I'll tell you what you're saying, the value that I'm getting back from people of saying, wow, this is so helpful. And it's so, it's accurate, but did you think of this? Or did you think of that? And it's causing us to do that reflection overall. So I think that's a great idea. You're now inspiring me to maybe I need to think about that in other parts of my life as well. But as it comes to resiliency, I look for this, whether I'm on a university board, so whether we're looking at potential scholarship applicants, whether we're hiring into one of the businesses that I'm involved in, whether it's in the manufacturing of cabinets all the way up to, you know, marketing strategy and analytics, or one of the startups, one of the things we try to look for is resiliency. And whether it's around the grit project, you know, how have people been able to deal with adversity in their lifetime, whatever that adversity was, have they been successful through that? But that resiliency is something that we try to find, because I think it shows that people, and this time, of course, like what we're dealing with right now, requires a tremendous amount of resiliency. But even when we get into our new normal, that new world, and Nick, you were talking about it before around, you know, the values, you know, at home and others, is like what type of environment and support are people getting? I think we're going to have to be more attuned to that. Of are people grounded in their own self-worth and the way that they see themselves and the community around them and the values and expectations they hold themselves up to be to respect other people, etc. How have they dealt with adversity? And we all have a really good example right now of how we're dealing with adversity. I think it'll show us, you know, some more of our true selves and our growing selves. So I think about resiliency, it is that, you know, in my background, it was, hey, we grew up in hard times, not as hard as others. I remember, you know, my parents told me a couple things, is that, hey, there's always going to be a lot more people poorer than you. There'll be a lot more people that have a lot more than you do. You're not the smartest person. There's always going to be somebody smarter and more accomplished, but, you know, God gave you a certain set of gifts and you had better use them to the max. And that's where, as we've looked at through, when I've looked at through this, even when I get down on myself and the same thing about getting, whether it's overwhelmed or whatnot, I step back and think about some of those basic things. And that's what keeps me going forward, resilient, and fuels my action oriented Tasmanian devil self.
I would just like to say it's really interesting to hear the two of you talk about this, and I'm always learning when I'm with you, by the way. so other people I know are going to too. I'll tell you really right now that something that's helping me stay resilient, I'm not sure I'm doing a great job of it, to be honest, right now. My job right now is a little different than a lot of people's because I get paid, as you know, to spend most of my time either one-on-one with people, where I kind of don't matter. And what I mean by that is it's not about me. You know, when I'm with any of you in a one-on-one coaching situation, I'm there for the person I'm coaching. I'm at your service. That means I have to be completely present in that moment, listening to everything that you're saying, trying to understand it so I can bring you a tool or new thinking and do all the things that you've mentioned. At this moment in time, that is feeling harder than it ever has before, right? Unable to meet with people in person. It's not just me, by the way. I've talked to a lot of coaches and therapists, and I think everybody's kind of finding this, right? The technology is not the same as meeting with a person live. And that somewhat sometimes impacts the intimacy of it. It also tends to create, I think, a little bit of a transactional nature, which is fatiguing. So I would say right now, I'm actually trying to figure out how to be more resilient in this moment with my team, myself. Like, is it a scheduling issue? Is it me exercising more, sleeping more, whatever it is? Because the most important thing is that in each moment, I can be my best self so that I can do what I'm supposed to be doing, right? So I would just say to people, whatever that means to you, you might want to just consider that, right? Because this is extra. What we're having right now is extra, extra stressful, extra intense. That means something different to each person, you know, but we're born alone, we die alone. And in between, we just walk with each other through a bunch of now moments. And a mentor of mine taught me that. And when I finally accepted that that was the case, I really started to realize that, oh, that what that means is I actually have to be able to be present. And I can't be present if I'm in my own chaos, in my own head, or distracted. And by the way, I'm not perfect. So believe me, it happens in those sometimes where I can't be fully there. And so I'm always working to be better at it. But I would say for me, resilience at the moment is maybe a moving target. And, you know, my intention is to figure it out. But you said something else that I just want to say, and maybe Nick, this is winding down for us, but, I don't think the new normal's coming. I actually think this is it. I am starting to believe that our new normal is this uncertainty. Like, I don't think that all of a sudden magically COVID's going to disappear. I don't think magically the issues that now have surfaced in a new way around our social norms, our cultural norms, the way we interact and respect each other. Those things have always been there. they're not going away. And so maybe some thinking is that instead of looking for this new idyllic state that's going to show up and then we're all going to kind of settle, that we need to get used to the fact that it's not going to be settled for a while. And so we need to learn to be resilient in this state, right? It's a new way of operating.
Well, that's, we shared a story before this episode around, I remember at that Microsoft team, where we were dealing with adversity in a much different way, a much different situation than we are now. But, you know, we even had t-shirts printed up that just said, embrace the ambiguity. That's how explicit I wanted to be and our leadership team wanted to be, just to recognize that things are changing. We don't have the answers. We need to be resilient. But let's be so explicit, we're going to put it on our t-shirts. And so that, I think that's right.
You know, this is really interesting. And yes, I'm seeing the plane land too, but I do want to say, first of all, for any leaders, there's also, I want to add to what I wanted to say about resilience, a long-term goal, but also just making a couple short-term goals. It's helped me as well in that. Mm-hmm. In the resilience as a company and as a leader, this is really good, sweet stuff coming up. I just want to say this. What's really interesting, first time ever that I'm thinking about it, it's almost like as if all the chips were on the table, and and somehow the table goes low and all the chips are in the air right now. You know, to me, Chris, you're making me think that if this remains the way it is for the next 6 months, you have to also understand maybe to take some measures to react in leadership, not just on the basis of what we talked about, but I'm thinking of, I'm the keynote speaker that gets paid a lot of money to go on a massive stage in front of tens of thousands of people of a company. And there's not even a needle that is specifically an ROI to Nick Vujicic on the day event or the annual conference that they have. I know companies that spend hundreds of millions of dollars a year on events to bring value, motivation, you know, spark, blah, 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 whatever it is, encouragement, strength of resilience, right? Mm-hmm. Could it be the evolution of coaching globally, wherein, like, I'm actually seeing, Chris, you asked me, you know, what do I think about being a one-on-one coach? You know, right now I would hate your job. I would hate your job to talk to somebody who's got so much going on, who haven't even discovered really some personal triggers of theirs where they overcome with fear. And when you're overcome, that's when you're not resilient. And it's the opposite of resilience. It's feeling overwhelmed. It's pushing through that. And the one-on-one coaching is magnificent. I'm going to ask you a question, Chris. Could this be an interesting revolution in the coaching where you say something to the CEO and the CEO doesn't do it the best way, or it was triggered by the CEO, but the flow through didn't happen as well as it could have been through the organization, and the chips that are now not on the table, but the table's now being pulled, fell through the floor, and the chips are in the air. I'm a visual guy, Jeremy. I'm seeing like almost like chewing gum or springs coming up from the floor to catch all those pieces, but from the floor where we are now. I don't see a CEO or apart from an entire team almost, or a designated person, just like Sean Lipman had, Chris, could it be the only way now that if this doesn't change, that if this is the new norm here, uncertainty, can companies really afford to not invest right now in the grounding of the team? That profitability and a new rhythm and what's ahead is almost secondary to, hey, let's get this grounding like never before. In fact, let's get an ARIA consulting, not just consulting the CEO, because that's one thing. Talk about departments. It's almost like there were all now dispersed departments where one-on-one it's limited now because of this social distancing. How much more of a momentum, disunity, if you will, that's separated from each other because of this situation, could it be, Chris, that you've got executive coaching, but you actually need an in-house coaching system for your company that almost takes a part of the annual budget of events that actually now could be specifically an ROI moving the needle because of Nick Vujicic came into a company and talked to that department. You could almost have it as a date, a 6-week course with a coach. This is what we needed. This is what we could do. And it's actually a separate organism now that actually brings the unity now that we're in this dispersed moment. What do you think? What do you guys think of that? Like, I've been thinking about that this week too.
I think that has been emerging, Nick. And so, yes, now it is probably going to become the norm. I'm already seeing it in places, you know, a model that we often use so that it could scale through an organization because most normally, we'll use Microsoft as an example, Jeremy, because we did it together. you know, Nick, so at the top of the house is where they often spend the money on executive coaches or advisors one-on-one, and under like the VP level or something, that's not practical. So what we would do is stand up group coaching cohorts so that we could, provide some scaffolding, if you will, right? A structure in place so that we weren't dependent on the leaders cascading the behavior and the messages down through the org. We could actually give moderators and then do a training so that the internal leaders were those people, right? Like I said, that's not uncommon. It exists already in a lot of big companies. I think it's less common in small companies. Jeremy, I don't know if you want to add to that.
Well, I mean, first of all, let's step back. Is what does any high-performing organization do? You've got to have coaching and you've got to have practice. I mean, I am a huge, anybody knows me, Chris knows, I drug her to a race. I am a huge NASCAR fan, very involved in the sport. I am
NASCAR badges.
I am very close friends with the Hendrick Motorsports and that organization. And so, but what, you know, what I learned through that, and it's less about the sport itself, and it's more about the teamwork. I'm so interested in the way that they, and I've gotten to know, you know, the teams personally enough mm-hmm. to know how intentional it is what they do to be a high performing organization, where every second or even split second counts. And mm-hmm. and so when I think about that and imply it, you know, putting it into my corporate and business world, it's like, well, we need coaching. We need to practice. We need coaching. We need outside influence, you know, part one. So that's the baseline. And that's why we do this. But then to both your points around it, it's just not coaching for the CEO or the VP. How do we get mm-hmm. this leverage? And you know, what Chris and her team was able to, we worked together on it over time. Is I at a certain point with Chris, I said, like, hey, you give me a lot of personal coaching and I've learned so much, but I want you to be there in action with me. I want you to give me real-time feedback as you're in real world situations with me. So you can afterwards tap on my shoulder and say, hey,
that's right.
Well here, and you didn't. And so that was part for me, but then also is like, hey, how do we extend that to my leadership team and the rest of the organization. Mm-hmm. And it was phenomenally successful. In fact, you know, I had a conversation with our old colleague, Aaron Woodman, last night, and we were reminiscing over some of this because it was just such a positive thing. Yeah. And the team took it as, of course, they learned and we worked better together because of that, but they saw it as just an intentional investment in them and an intentional investment in trying to make the organization mm-hmm. more successful. And it wasn't, you know, just a HR playbook and everybody feels what colors they are and all this stuff. It was more of an active team sport about let's mm-hmm. do this really, let's do it. You know, Chris would come, for example, to our twice annual planning sessions where she was part of the planning session. We were setting ground rules. We were talking through and prioritizing things. And to see the arc that we came through where, you know, in 1 year we had a 28% reduction in budget, and yet we still needed to launch what was known as Windows 10, which was one of the biggest launches of really? Microsoft's mm-hmm. time. And so we went through that to where we had a group, brand new group of leaders who've come together. And by the way, we'd had
also a reduction. There we go.
Through that time period, we had a reduction. We had to unfortunately lay off some really talented people. We had a major reduction in budget. We had new leaders who had come together who are now working for a new leader, me. And many of us didn't know each other. And I knew I needed Chris along that journey with me. I knew I needed that type of skill set to help us through that. And it was amazing to see that arc because we went from having those talks at like a planning session, which is, no, this is my budget. What are you doing with yours? And people pointing fingers or perhaps not even talking about it, just being reserved because they're scared, to getting to 3 years later where we were having active debates. But active debates about the organization and how we were going to do gives and takes and how we were going to work together. And it's phenomenal. People were talking about giving people to other
right.
their teammates or giving budgets to their teammates. Cause it's like, hey, I realize that if we invest in these things and if I'm able to give you this person, you're going to be, we're going to be more successful and you're going to make my life easier and my team. And mm-hmm. so I've seen it in action. What you're saying, I think is spot on. It's an investment that does have direct ROI, and perhaps in this remote world that we're in, there's some parts of it that makes it more difficult, but those of us who are dealing with virtual teams and these Zoom organizations, perhaps it makes it easier. perhaps it makes it easier to have somebody listening in and observing and providing real-time feedback in situations like these. So I think it's spot on. Yes.
Yeah, I think more small and medium businesses will catch on to that. I love you guys so much. Well said, both of you on that. Like, all these points are so, so important. I just want to say it's such a privilege for me to share this stage with you guys in trying to just encourage our leaders, whoever's watching or listening to us. We love you. Keep leading. We hope that this episode has helped you understand the importance of when you're doing the waltz on the tightrope. When you're on the tightrope, it doesn't mean you're perfectly still, but your feet ain't moving. And sometimes the wind comes and you just got to do everything you can to keep your feet still. Mm-hmm. And so we hope that this has helped you to just find your grounding as a person individually in this world, in your family, in your company and business, in whatever endeavors you have. Jeremy, you've been a joy, a wealth of wisdom and experience. Congratulations, by the way, on all your amazing success. Thank you. I love your heart for people. I love your humility and your transparency. Thank you for sharing your life with us today.
It's been an absolute privilege. And, of course, Chris has been a big part of my life and ups and downs over the years and become a close personal friend. And now, Nick, it's been awesome to finally meet you and learn a bit about you and count you among that friend group. So thank you, brother.
One day I want to go into NASCAR with you. I'll hold on with both.
Done.
Oh, dear.
Done.
Two Tasmania Devils in a NASCAR. Roar.
Chris. I'm afraid of that.
Love you, Christine. Thank you so much for today.
Thank you.
No worries. Everyone
go watching. Go team.
Go team. Everyone watching, please make sure that you rate, review, and share this with someone who you know is going to be encouraged as well. Thank you for joining us here on the Leadership Now series.
Hey guys, thank you so much for listening. Help us reach as many people as possible by giving us a rating, a review, and subscribing to this podcast. Love you so much. And remember, share this with anyone you know who needs to hear this as well. I'll see you next week.